What do we think about when we pass by a veteran's cemetery? Probably most of us don't pay much attention. The radio is still on with our favorite music, and we're thinking about the day's tasks or about how we're late for that appointment. Besides, most of us try to avoid downers whenever we can. But maybe in that veteran's cemetery are some hidden revelations about who we are and what we have to be grateful for in our lives. When I last visited a veteran's cemetery, I looked around to see if any names were inscribed on the markers that were similar to or the same as my own. And then came the thought that this or that grave might very easily have been mine. Pretty sobering. I remembered that I came literally within a few seconds of likely being sent to Vietnam as a Coast Guard radio man. Most people don't know it and are very surprised when I tell them, but Coast Guard radio men had one of the highest casualty rates in Vietnam. That was because there was a Coast Guard radio man in the bow of every one of those patrol boats in the Mekong and other Vietnamese rivers. I was in the process of signing the papers to become a Coast Guard radio man in the regulars, naively thinking it would keep me out of Vietnam, when one of the recruiters came over and said, "Oh, by the way, a position just opened up in the reserves." Not for that recruiter, who knows if I would be standing in front of you today. As Larry's poem so eloquently puts it, I read his cardboard sign with care, surprised to find my name is there. But it's one thing to say it could have been me, and quite another to say thank you to those who did serve, those who knew so much more pain, both physical and emotional, than many of us will experience in a lifetime. And as I looked at the graves, I thought about the Normandy invasion. What would have happened if those soldiers had not climbed that hill and overtaken those artillery positions? Would I and everyone I know have ended up a victim of a German victory, maybe dying in a concentration camp? Sobering thought. I was born in 1945, around the time both the Germans and the Japanese were defeated. But in my family, World War II was still going on for the next 40 years or so. You see, my father worked on the Manhattan Project and spent the rest of his life being defensive about what he had helped create. My mother, who had gone to a Quaker college and become an ardent pacifist, insisted that only by getting rid of the weapons my father helped create would we have any chance of human survival. She had also opposed U.S. entry into World War II, even though she visited Germany in the 1930s and saw Hitler's troops goose-stepping through Nuremberg. My position growing up was that both parents were partly right, partly wrong. They had grabbed onto two opposite sides of an unsolvable riddle. My father was right, I concluded, that we should have gone to war, but he was wrong that we should have dropped the two atomic bombs on Japanese cities. My mother was right, I concluded, that we shouldn't have dropped the bombs, but she was wrong that we shouldn't have entered the war. Still, I felt terribly torn throughout my youth. After my one-year tour of active duty in the Coast Guard Reserve ended, I headed to Columbia University in New York City, just in time for the student anti-Vietnam War revolts in which I participated. Thus, warfare was never very far from my consciousness, even though I had the incredible privilege of never actually having to be on a battlefield. As I've grown up and lived a long life, I've discovered that my parents were simply expressing the ambivalence of all human beings about the subject of war, an ambivalence that for many of us was greatly intensified during recent wars in which our country appeared to be the aggressor. That ambivalence is one reason when we pass that veterans cemetery, we don't often look twice. We don't want to be reminded of that which is troubling, of that which might stir our deepest confusion. That ambivalence is also the reason when we pass that homeless veteran with his cardboard sign, we too often turn the other way. We choose to live the unexamined life rather than look at deep feelings which cannot easily be reconciled. The worst thing we do, I believe, and I am as guilty of this as anyone, is to assume that the living veteran, or the veteran in the cemetery, is or was some kind of war hawk. This represents a failure to see the inherent worth and dignity of every person, one of our UU principles. The truth is that they are just as human as the rest of us, and just as unique. History just hit them harder than it hit us. Stereotyping is a way of dismissing, and we would all do well to notice when, consciously or unconsciously, we start moving in that direction. We also tend to forget that by far the majority of soldiers in that veteran cemetery did not go into war voluntarily. They were drafted. And, except for the two world wars and a brief time in the late 1960s when there was the draft lottery, college students seldom had to serve. In other words, being part of an educated elite that would be most likely to go on to higher paying jobs anyway, made a person less likely to be pulled into involuntary military service. Many of us have had some difficulties with math or language skills, but pity the poor soul who had difficulties with both and could not get into a college. Such a person, after being released from the military, would also be more likely to carry deep physical and psychological wounds that could possibly keep him from getting any job at all. Consciously or unconsciously, we can all too easily look down on those souls, forgetting to see them as hapless victims of humanity's penchant for polarization and retaliation. They were not monsters. They were humans like us, the beloved sons and daughters of mothers and fathers like ours. Once they're on that boat or plane bound for the battle zone, soldiers and sailors have no control over the direction of a particular war takes. If you have problems with a particular war, exercise your rights as a citizen and take it up with the politicians and billionaires and generals. They have control. And to all veterans, both living and deceased, offer compassion. Not for them, that might be you on the street corner with a cardboard sign. If it were not for them, we might still be living in a British colony, or slavery might still be the law and all of us would be in prison who opposed it. Or a German Kaiser or Fuhrer might be running the show while we starved to death in a prison camp. If it were not for those soldiers and sailors, that chair you are sitting in right now might be an empty chair. What do we do with sobering thoughts like these? We don't need to spend the rest of our lives dwelling on them, but maybe we can take a little time to let them seep through our consciousness. Maybe even visit a military cemetery today. Call or write a veteran friend. Get out pictures or letters from a loved one who may have perished in a war. Give a hug to a veteran. Yes, maybe even drop a bill or two into that hat on the corner. Carl Sandburg wrote a very memorable and well-known poem that you may have heard or read. Pile the bodies high at Austerlitz and Waterloo. Shovel them under and let me work. I am the grass. I cover all. And pile them high at Gettysburg, and pile them high at Ypres and Verdun. Shovel them under and let me work. 2 years, 10 years, and passengers ask the conductor, what place is this? Where are we now? I am the grass. Let me work. The poet is telling us on one level that, yes, time heals, or at least covers up, but on another level, he is reminding us of the pains of war, bringing them to light. The poet does not mean we should simply let grass cover over the pains of the past. I believe it is healthy to bring up those pains, just not to dwell on them. That can be a real balancing act, because the reality is that the pains are never entirely healed within us. If we bring them up all the time, we will be consumed by them. If we never bring them up, they may well fester beneath the surface. What we need to take away from our examination of life's painful side, I believe, is a recognition of our own universal human vulnerability. And when we have recognized that, then we can begin to be even more thankful for what life has given us, thankful for what others have sacrificed so that we might be here today in this room, singing, holding hands, being in an extended family, breathing, feeling, laughing, crying, loving, being alive. In a symphony, the happiest and most joyous movement almost always occurs immediately after the saddest. This is because the light of day always seems so much brighter after we emerge from darkness. May we experience a little of that darkness today, and as we emerge again into the daylight, may we be all the more grateful for it. Let us close with a few moments of silent meditation. Amen.